Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Since the beginning of the pandemic, millions of Americans have lost their jobs. Those working parents fortunate enough to keep their jobs have been facing a new set of serious challenges, such as loss of childcare and loss of predictable and dependable school schedules. Parents working from home are often trying to parent at the same time as they're working. That's challenging enough, but for single parents whose jobs require them to work outside the home, things are even harder. These challenges are hitting women harder than men and forcing many women out of the workforce. This hour, we'll try to understand what's happening and what the long-term consequences might be. We'll also talk about how Iowa's already existing childcare crisis has been deepened by the pandemic. And working parents, we want to hear from you. What has your experience been like with the school year beginning soon? What are your biggest challenges? What are your greatest fears? Have you had to decide to quit your job? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is Jennifer Zwagerman. She is director of the Drake Agricultural Law Center and assistant professor of law. She's also the mother of boys ages 5 and 8. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And what have you done with your children so you can talk with us today?
They are currently out in the other room with as many Legos as I could find to entertain them.
All right. So I think that's something that a lot of working parents can relate to right now. Tell me a little bit about how your life changed in March when you needed to start working from home, and what happened with your kids' childcare and school?
Well, when the schools closed here in Polk County, Drake, where I teach, also went online. And so all of a sudden, I had the two boys home with me who are at the ages of 5 and 8, very energetic, we'll say. And I had to start teaching online as well. And we weren't really prepared for any of that. I didn't have a desk at home. And so, you know, working out of the kitchen with my laptop, constantly had children kind of popping into videos. That's like they have a radar. Anytime a class went live or I was recording, you know, that was when they would somehow magically pop up behind me or need a cheese stick opened. But it just really hit home for me how much you rely on, as a working parent, that village, wherever it might be, you know, childcare and school, just, you know, the time you have to yourself to sort of get organized, get that done, and structured my day kind of around that schedule as well.
And you are fortunate to be part of a two-parent household. You and your husband are both working parents. How has his schedule changed, and how has that worked with childcare?
It's been both obviously a blessing to have, you know, that support here too, but it's also hit home that, you know, my job is much more flexible than his. We're both working at home, so that means if I did need to run out, there is at least someone home with him. But he is much more of a schedule that is 8 to 4. And even with working at home, if he's on a phone call all day, a lot of networking and meetings online, it made it really hard to be able to have somebody else step in to take care of the kids or distract the kids when I'm up, you know, in class 3 or 4 days a week just for certain times to help with schoolwork during the day. Those types of things really fell to me, just having that more flexibility than he does.
And of course, teaching isn't the only thing you do. So in addition to teaching your classes online and that time, how did you fit the rest of your work into your day?
That's probably been one of the most difficult things for me is the feeling that I can't fit a lot of that in. you know, I'm starting year two of what I've always considered to be my dream job. And all of a sudden, time to focus, to concentrate, particularly during the day, is gone. And so, you know, a lot of the things that I would like to be doing, even things that we think of as minimal, updating blogs and social media and speaking engagements, really take a lot more time than I realized, I think, frankly, or maybe more concentration and uninterrupted time. I've been able to do some writing, but most of the time, if I'm going to be doing writing, it's after the kids go to bed. And so it's 9 p.m. to, you know, 1 a.m. is my uninterrupted time to do that work. And part of that is because could I distract them on TV all the time? Absolutely. If I give them electronics, they will be happy. And, you know, I would get all the time during the day I needed. But then I get the pressures of being mom and feeling like you're failing your kids by giving them, you know, 6 hours of TV or computer time during the day as well. And so that balance has really, particularly this summer, hit hard. And in terms of how do you balance what your kids need? You know, we pulled them out of daycare in March because I'm high risk. And so we wanted to, that was a decision we were able to make, which we're appreciative of. But at the same time, it's definitely impacted, you know, sort of the ability to grow a career at an early stage and focus. Like I had planned this summer on this whole list of things that I was going to do to get ready for fall and knock out of the park, you know, before we got back to the school year.
Well, let's talk about fall. What does that look like in your family?
Well, we're waiting to hear exactly what kind of schedule the kids are going to have. My youngest will start kindergarten this fall. My oldest is going into third grade. And we're in Ankeny, where they're going to have a hybrid schedule. So we will be either a Monday, Thursday, or a Tuesday, Friday in-person schedule, every other Wednesday in person. And I'm comfortable with that. You know, I'm going back into the classroom myself. So in terms of managing risk, I like that. Right now, it's just waiting to hear which schedule we have and hoping that it's a Monday, Thursday in-person forum because that works with my teaching schedule better. But really just trying to figure out how we're going to make that work, how I'm going to adjust my classes at Drake so that I can be home to work with the kids at least for a good part of the at-home days. How my husband might be able to rearrange his schedule to the point possible to do that. We know we'll have someone home the days they're home, but it's just making sure that we have the ability to sit with a kindergartner in particular who can't read at this point to make sure that that schoolwork and the learning sort of kicks off strong to start the year.
You work at Drake University, and your employer has been flexible and understanding. I've been listening to a lot of radio pieces about this recently and doing a lot of reading, and it's been shown that the productivity of men in academia has pretty much maintained during this pandemic. And for women in academia, it has not. Are you concerned about that, the long-term consequences of what this might do to your career?
I am, and the flexibility is wonderful, and I appreciate that. I have the opportunity, I'm on a tenure track, and I have the opportunity to delay that tenure track for a year, should I choose to do so, which is wonderful that this type of situation wouldn't count against me. But at the same time, it puts me another year behind. And I worry about what that means long term on this process for trying to catch up, trying to maintain kind of the persona and kind of the reputation that you need within the industry and in the profession. And all of that obviously is something that a lot of people are struggling with, but it does definitely add to the worry and concern about what this means for ensuring that that I'm continuing my career, particularly, like I said, you know, this happened during the first year of transferring to this new role. And, you know, with that on top of it was definitely an added layer of concern.
In the spring, this felt temporary. And now here we are 5 months later, and we're looking at who knows how long of continuing to juggle, of continuing to make these difficult decisions. How are you holding up?
Some days are better than others. It's overwhelming when I start to think about all of the things. I think my default right now is what can I do to be organized? And so I have these a million different organization projects going around the house, just trying to have it set up so that we have a schoolroom area and we have the toy room area and my desk is organized so that ideally we'd have sort of this seamless flow. And then after about 2 days of that, the reality is that just doesn't work either in terms of, you know, feeling organized because things change constantly. And so, you know, you rely on friends, even just being a part of social media groups where you hear other people struggling with the same anxiety and worry and concerns, whether they're full-time stay-at-home moms or full-time working parents. That actually helps just to feel as though it's not just me that's struggling with this. But there are days where it just is overwhelming and you don't even know where to begin to start to cross things off the list.
And you're fortunate. You're in a position where you can work from home. We know that so many other working moms and working parents are going through a lot more difficult situations. Is that something you spend time thinking about as well?
It is. You know, I have friends in that situation, and I'm amazed. You know, you mentioned earlier the struggle for single parents and for those where one or both have to work outside the home. And so I think that's also one of the things you struggle with is, you know, realizing how privileged we are and how fortunate we are in our family to be where we are, and yet still feeling as though we're struggling and we're failing, whether it be in how I interact with the kids or my career. That's always still a struggle and something we think about often.
Jennifer Zwagerman, thank you so much for sharing your experience today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Jennifer Zwagerman is director of the Drake Agricultural Law Center and an assistant professor of law. She's also the mother of two boys, ages 5 and 8. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the pressures the pandemic has put on working parents, particularly on mothers in our culture. Yes, millions of Americans have lost their jobs, but for those working parents fortunate enough to keep their jobs, there's a whole host of other pressures that they've been dealing with. Perhaps the loss of childcare. School is very uncertain right now. That dependable school schedule that parents know and love and use in making their lives work is now in question. Things are hard right now, and a lot of women are being forced out of the workforce. We're going to talk about what the long-term consequences of that might be, and we want to hear from you this hour. Tell us about your experiences. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have this comment from Brianna. It's all certainly coming to a head now. It's one thing to make things work temporarily and just bear down like in the spring. But with an unknown school situation approaching, it becomes a scary situation to imagine getting through without losing our jobs, our minds, our self-care, and our marriages. My next guest today is Renee Kramer. She is the Herb and Karen Baum Chair of Ethics in the Professions at Drake University. Renee, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charity.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. I think it's also relevant to mention that you are also a mom, as am I. Your son is 15 years old?
Yes, he is.
So how has life been for you since March?
Oh, wow. I'm really, really fortunate that I have an introverted, self-reliant, self-directed 15-year-old. So that has been fine. He's actually really thriving in a remote learning environment. He's doing great. He did a remote summer camp for 3 weeks. But all of the other things that I heard from Professor Zwagerman are exactly the kinds of things I've been experiencing. I am definitely working all the time and in every single space of my home. And I definitely feel the tension between being an ideal worker and an ideal mom and an ideal human, and I'm trying to let go of the possibility of being any of them. And I am noticing, exactly as she closed, the relative privilege that I have as someone in a dual earner family, with a professional job that allows me tremendous flexibility, while also knowing that so many of my friends and colleagues are in a vastly different situation, and a sense of guilt and helplessness in not being able to remediate or ameliorate the very real stress that they're feeling. I definitely have very bad days, and I definitely have very good days. And I know that all of those days are tied to a legacy of structural inequality that puts women at a disadvantage in this setting.
Well, and you talked about working everywhere in the home and working at all hours of the day. That's something I know that a lot of us can relate to, but it's also something that we are seeing play out in research. We are seeing that women in particular are seeing their work-life balance, if we can even use that word anymore, or at least the separation between work and life disintegrate.
Yeah, so I actually don't believe work-life balance is possible. And I've written an article co-written with two other political scientists about the fallacy of a work-life balance. But we're definitely seeing the unhealthy integration of work into all spaces of life, particularly among women, because women tend to be integrators in their work style and they tend to be multitaskers in their work style. So it's very easy now to have five different tabs open on your computer, be calling a plumber while calling into IPR, while waiting for the veterinarian to call you back on your cell phone.
This sounds very specific, Renee.
Yes, right. I actually don't need a plumber. I need someone to fix my dryer. But a recent academic article was actually titled, "I'm Not Working From Home, I'm Living at Work." And it was about women's experiences of COVID employment and this real sense that I'm not working from home. I'm simply always living at work. And that tends to be true of women in professional settings who are now working remotely.
All right, let's try to put this in historical context, because, of course, the history of women in the workforce is a fairly recent history. And then from the 1950s on, the number of women in the workforce has pretty much steadily grown until we actually were in the majority very briefly. So
very briefly.
Right. When we look at the impact of economic downturns in the past, how has that affected women in the past? I mean, we're in an economic downturn, but it's kind of a special one. So we'll talk about this one in particular in a little while. But looking historically, how have women fared?
Well, it's interesting because most regular recessions tend to impact men disproportionately negatively because men tend to make up the bigger proportion of the paid workforce. But past recessions have hit male wage earners harder than female wage earners. They've hit families in general, but men have suffered more employment consequences as a result of most recessions. This recession is going to be different for a lot of different reasons. And you're right, women's paid workforce involvement is a relatively recent phenomenon at the rates that we had seen right before the pandemic. I think it's really important to note that women have always been in the paid workforce. They have tended to be women of color, they've tended to be women born into poverty, and they've tended to be single and young women. So the newer phenomenon of married white women working outside of the home for pay, that's a 1950s phenomenon. And we saw waves at World War II and the 1960s sexual revolution where women were steadily increasing inequality of numbers in the workforce. But it wasn't until February of 2020, a month before the pandemic, that women were a majority of the workforce in the United States in the paid employment sector. So now we've got this really interesting moment where women are beginning to leave the workforce as a result of COVID, either voluntarily or not voluntarily. And that is being disproportionately affecting Black women in particular. One study in Michigan showed that 50% of Black women without a college degree were involuntarily leaving the workforce as a result of COVID. So people on the margins economically are being really negatively impacted by work from home orders and by COVID in general. I want to restate that. They're being negatively impacted by a lack of a social safety net and a lack of a robust response to the pandemic.
Over the last 15 years in particular, we have seen research that shows that even though we've seen women become a much more important part of the workforce, in the homes, at least in heteronormative families, women do tend to still be the default caregiver. Tell me what we know about that.
Yes, women tend to be the default caregiver in that if you're in the same room with your opposite sex partner, and your child needs something, your child goes to the female partner. If someone needs to call school to register them, it tends to be the default is that the woman takes care of these tasks. That was true pre-pandemic, and it is increasingly true now. A recent study showed that our parenting time in the household post-pandemic is up from 30 hours a week to 59 hours a week. So parents at home in pandemic are doing house and childcare related work at a rate of about 60 hours a week. Now, the key thing there is that moms are doing 15 more hours per week than dads post-pandemic. So this default nature of mothers, maybe because they have a more flexible schedule, maybe because that's the way their marriage has been set up, maybe that's because of societal and gender pressures, women are actually doing much more housework than they were. And they already were doing more than men. The other interesting thing is that men and women in marriages tend to perceive the need for housework similarly. But men are much more likely to ignore what needs to be done than to do it. So there's a dissonance there where both of them notice what needs to happen, but the women are the ones who are doing the work. And that comes at the expense not of a woman's productivity, but generally her sleep, her marital satisfaction, and her mental health.
How does this play out in same-sex couples?
In same-sex couples, there's pretty clear evidence that there is a much more equitable distribution of housework and childcare and much higher rates of marital satisfaction. I haven't seen good data post-COVID, but I'm really curious to see the social science that comes out of this time for how same-sex couples have adapted differently than heterosexual couples.
Now, as I mentioned a comment from one of our listeners a little while ago saying that in the spring, when it felt like we were just doing this for a little while, we could bear down and get through it. But now this is long-term. What are you worried about now that we're looking at many more months of this?
What am I not worried about? The long-term impacts of this are very likely to be a continued widening inequity for women and for women of color. I am very concerned about women not returning to work or women returning to work in a way that exacerbates existing inequalities. For instance, I really appreciate my employer's stopping of the tenure clock, but I also really appreciate what Professor Zwagerman said. When academics stop a tenure clock, that delays them a year from a raise associated with achieving that milestone in their career. Over time, that's an accumulation of negative impact on a woman's salary. I think we're going to see that across industries. I also think that the way that feminization of employment has happened in the United States disparately impacts women negatively. So women in healthcare, women in education, those folks are being tasked with a much different kind of stress in terms of returning to the workplace and their decision-making around that. And that is likely to increase inequality. I also worry about long-term mental health and stress. We already know, and there's been some really good research done on burnout, and we know that women and men experience work burnout differently, and that women are experiencing burnout as a result of internalized pressure to perform and structural inequalities that exacerbate their exceptionally large workload. I worry we're going to see mental health impacts for women who are working from home and feeling like they are failing at being the ideal mom, the ideal partner, the ideal self, and the ideal worker.
We're talking about the challenges facing working parents right now, and you are welcome to join the conversation. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Renee Kramer, the Herb and Karenbaum Chair of Ethics in the Professions at Drake University. Maria brings up this point. She says, I work in public health, so I'm not at risk of losing my job, although I know so many others in the American workforce are. My biggest challenge is balancing being a mom during the time where work can and will bleed into nights and weekends. After all, everyone knows where we are right now, so it's super easy to let that one meeting run a little past five or set up that conference call for 7:30 a.m. The pandemic has allowed people to know our whereabouts who otherwise wouldn't, and it makes trying to say no a challenge. And I think that that's a really interesting point. I've certainly felt that myself. It was easy to say, hey, I have to go pick up my kids at this time, and so I'm not available. And now everybody knows that you're not going anywhere.
You know, Bloomberg Media released a report yesterday based on 3.1 million American workers, and they found that the workday is 48 minutes longer now. And that is precisely because we aren't commuting. So those 25 minutes you might have had where no one could reach you, now you're absolutely reachable. We also have more meetings in our day and more emails in our day.
Anne is on the line in Ames. Hi, Anne. Hi, Anne.
Hi, this is Amy.
Oh, hello, Amy. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, I was one thing that I've been doing personally, but I would love to see if there's any other feedback, is preserving the relationship you have with your children during this time where I have a 3- and a 6-year-old and I'm working from home. And, you know, the patience just runs so thin at some point in the day. And so I've been taking some vacation time, which is helpful, where I truly do not work and I focus on my children and I have it marked on my calendar that I'm out. But I'm just curious to know, what are other people doing to, you know, really preserve those relationships with your children and not be so intense all the time? It's so challenging.
Yeah, and that is a huge challenge. I think a lot of parents are really dealing with that. And Renee, I know that's not really your area of expertise, but it is something that you were talking about earlier. Women in particular are dealing with a lot of guilt as mothers anyway, and may feel like they're not being a good mom in this moment when they're trying to do all of these things at the same time. And at the same time, I have heard a lot of moms say, and dads say, I'm really grateful for this additional time I've had with my kids. Renee, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
thank you.
Great.
Prior to the pandemic, women were doing 70% of all childcare in the home. Women are still doing 70% of all childcare in the home. And I really love what Amy suggested as finding time to block out and make really intentional the idea that what you're doing now is caring for your child and caring for your relationship and caring for the way that your family is going to interact. It's also clear, and maybe this is a point of optimism, it's also clear that men who are in the home now are seeing and recognizing the kinds of labor and emotional labor that women are doing every day, pre and post pandemic. And in many relationships, this is causing a more equitable distribution of labor in the home. So there is some reason to think that in healthy marriages, this will have a positive impact on the way that men and women interact with themselves and their children. For single parents, I imagine the burden is incredible. And I know I've at Drake, we have a list, a faculty list, where we're all getting in touch with each other and asking, how can we help each other? What do you need in this pandemic? Sometimes a parent simply needs to socially distance and wave at another adult because they haven't seen another adult in a week. Maybe you need produce from my garden. Maybe you need help hanging a gutter. Those kinds of mutual aid initiatives that are grassroots are popping up all over the place, and they tend to be women led, which is really lovely because it reminds us that we do indeed need an entire village in order to parent through any situation.
It does feel like this pandemic has revealed to us a lot of the hidden problems within our culture. Of course, the long-term question is, what happens when we're through this? And we don't know the answer to that one, do we, Renee?
We don't. I think we see lots of grassroots options and calls for really magnificently important structural change. Just like some days are good and some days are bad in pandemics, some days I feel tremendously optimistic. Some days I don't. I think you caught me on a morning when I don't feel as optimistic about our capacity to make meaningful change, in large part because those of us who see the necessity for it are also the ones who are exhausted and isolated. So to the extent that we can find common cause with each other and really be honest about the difficulties we're encountering as a result of this pandemic and our lack of a social safety net, I think we will be a better society in the future.
Renee Kramer, thank you so much for being here today.
Have a good day.
You too. Hang in there. Renee Kramer, the Herb and Karenbaum Chair of Ethics in the Professions at Drake University. We're talking about the pressures placed on working parents in this pandemic, pressures that are first forcing many women in particular out of the workforce. In a moment, I'm going to talk to a single mom about how she's coping, and we'll talk about Iowa's childcare crisis. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the many pressures that this pandemic has put on working parents. And of course, being a working parent is pretty much always challenging. But for single parents in this moment, the challenges are overwhelming. Rima McCoy-McDeed is executive director of the Central Iowa Center for Independent Living. She is also the single mother of a five-year-old daughter, and she is on the line with me now. Hello, Rima.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you have a beautiful five-year-old daughter. Tell me how things have been going for you since March.
Oh, wow. You know, this has been the longest year as far as my experience as a parent has been concerned. And it's been extraordinary. You know, in March when I shut down CISL as far as in-person services are concerned and took my daughter out of daycare, the plan was to start a garden in the backyard and teach her how to sew and just really seize the opportunity that the pandemic was presenting to us. And I regret to inform you that we have not done any of those things.
You're not alone.
No. So yeah, my daughter does not know how to, grow and cultivate tomatoes. She's still here and I'm still here and, we still have a roof over our heads and our priorities have definitely, become very pragmatic and immediate, since March, certainly.
And you are a high risk person. So you've had to make decisions to pull your daughter out of childcare if that was available, but that's also meant that you've made the decision that she'll be starting kindergarten online. How has that gone?
Yeah. So she has been going to a child care provider that's located across the street from my organization for as long as she's been in child care. So she's got a close relationship with everybody there, including the provider. And so that was a very hard decision. But I am a high risk person. And because I'm a single parent, I have to do everything that I can to ensure that my health is prioritized. And so I did pull her out and with a lot of trepidation determined that online school was going to be our option this year. And it's been hard because she's been looking forward to kindergarten for years now. Yeah. We had a lunchbox picked out, a backpack. She was totally excited about getting onto the school bus and going to big kids school. And so the news has been a blow for her. And she doesn't understand that mommy has a compromised immune system at all. And so trying to talk her through that is a pretty fruitless effort. But I know that she'll understand when she's older, but right now, you know, she's definitely feeling like she's missing out, and the fact that hundreds of thousands of other children in Iowa are going to be in the same predicament as her is not really registering with her yet.
That doesn't mean anything to a five-year-old. Right. So as school starts, you'll be balancing your work from home. You will be taking care of a five-year-old and all the hours that she's not doing online schooling. But you'll also, I assume, you're going to have to support her with online schooling as well, because five-year-olds run into technical problems from time to time and maybe don't have the longest attention span. How are you, through all of this, how are you taking care of yourself? Is there any time for that?
Well, before I even think about that, I have to take into consideration the fact that even in the midst of all of these challenges, I experience a lot of privilege. You know, 4 out of 5 African Americans in the U.S. work in jobs that do not allow for opportunities to work from home or work virtually. And so I'm a member of a stark minority in that capacity, because I am able to work from home. And I do know colleagues who are also Black who are experience similar challenges that I do and have to work and do have to send their children to school, unfortunately. And so when I feel like I'm reaching my breaking point, I center myself with that and acknowledge that at least I have this option. As far as self-care is concerned, you know, I sneak it in when I can. I've become very, very well versed in doing a little bit of meditation at 4:30 in the morning when the opportunity arises, and just maximizing every single moment that I have available to me. It's become very commonplace for my colleagues to get emails from me at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon, and it's just become par for the course. And obviously, I've got other colleagues who are also maximizing their time as well, and sending emails and communications at odd hours as well. And so I know that I'm in good company.
Well, and you're the director of the organization. So the fact that you need this flexibility, that's also allowed you to set the tone and the expectation for your employees?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at CISL, we really pride ourselves on working hard. And so in many respects, the first few months of the pandemic, when we shifted to virtual, I spent a lot of time working with staff at CISL to not feel bad about working from home and working in creative ways that our colleagues who also work in human services might not have had and currently don't have as well, as far as working remotely is concerned. And I understand the guilt, because when you do what we do, which is working with people who experience disabilities, it's very focused on being directly with people, providing supports directly to people. And so that shift has been very palpable at CISL, accommodating the reality that meaningful things can happen with the people that we work with, even if we're not physically in their presence, has taken some time for all of us to acclimate to.
Rima, thank you so much for sharing your experiences today, and please take care.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Rima McCoy-McDeed is executive director of Central Iowa Center for Independent Living. She's also a single mother of a 5-year-old daughter who will be starting kindergarten online in just a few weeks. Now, Iowa was already facing a child care crisis before the pandemic, and now it's gotten much, much worse. The Iowa Women's Foundation has made child care a focus of their work over the past year, and now that work feels even more essential. Dawn Oliver Wyand is here with me now. She's executive director of the Iowa Women's Foundation. Hello, Dawn.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And just briefly, give me the big picture here. Tell me the kind of childcare crisis we were facing before March, and then tell me what the picture looks like now.
Sure. So as many people probably know or don't know, the Women's Foundation has been focusing on childcare for the last 2 years. And our research and community conversations have told us that we had a shortage of available quality, affordable childcare. As many as 350,000 slots were needed across our state. Since COVID hit, we've seen childcare centers and in-homes close rapidly. In April, we knew that there were 667 childcare centers and 191 in-homes. A recent study shows us that we could lose another 51% of our childcare supply after COVID because they won't be able to come back. They're just not going to have the resources to be able to do it. So COVID has really shined a light on the need and is really honestly helping us elevate this story and trying to get the support that we need.
Well, and childcare, of course, is an essential part of our economy. It's an essential part of making it possible for working parents to work. But part of your work has also been pointing out how undervalued childcare is in our culture. That has really been thrown into stark relief by this.
Yeah, I would have to say, too, I was getting very frustrated in the early months of COVID with all the talk of the essential worker. And you were seeing ads all over, and you were seeing things in articles in the newspaper, and you were seeing our elected officials talk about the essential worker. But nobody ever mentioned the essential child care worker. And quite honestly, if we don't have child care, that's the economic driver that's going to help our recovery. We're not going to recover. And so the Women's Foundation started a campaign called the Care Force for Our Workforce. And we really want people to see that our child care providers are professional essential workforce, and we need them.
We'd love to hear from you if you're a working parent. Share your experiences with us. We've got a couple of comments here. This one's from Michael. He says, our family will have to change daycare or after school care because our current daycare can't accommodate online learning and rules prohibit transporting them to in-person learning. Our first choice was online learning, but the curriculum time requirements are not flexible for two working parents. So now we face the prospect of having to miss work due to quarantine if our child tests or is exposed to positive COVID cases. And also the new childcare will shut down in bad weather. That also causes us to miss work. And of course, Dawn, that just scratches the surface of the incredibly complicated decisions that parents are making and that childcare providers are also making in this. As you were talking about earlier, that childcare is essential, but there's also a great deal of risk involved. We've lost a lot of childcare providers because the risk has been too high for them.
Yep. I have to be honest with you, Charity. I am so relieved that I am not a working parent right now. My children are all grown, and I really feel a lot of empathy for these parents and the childcare providers. I honestly don't know how they're doing it. I ask the childcare providers what keeps them up at night. Number one is financials. Many of them are now open at 50% capacity or less. And just as your listener said, you know, there's the transportation issue, there's the COVID issue, there's all kinds of things that are keeping that capacity down. We also know that it's the safety and the cleaning and finding the PPE that they're having trouble with. And then it's staffing. Quite honestly, you know, people are afraid to be working in centers, and they may have compromised situations like your Rima, the woman earlier. There's just lots of things that are playing into all of this, and it's a tough time for everybody.
We also have this comment from Stephanie. She said, I will have to quit my job and go on unemployment. We don't have daycare as my child is 12 and I'm a single mom. It will fall on me to homeschool him. I also have a 14-year-old who has severe special needs. He lives in a group home and hasn't been allowed to leave the home, nor can we go visit him. I've not been able to see my son since February. I was able to visit him through a window. Again, that's a comment from Stephanie and underscores how unique every family situation is as well. I think we're trying to find a one-size-fits-all solution in an arena where there are no good choices, no easy choices. So, Dawn, you were already on this campaign for 2 years to try to raise awareness about the need for childcare in Iowa and build community solutions. You were making progress. Many communities were making progress and realizing this need. Now we've had this tremendous blow. What do you think happens next?
So we're really pushing hard at the foundation and with all of our partners across the state to look at this as both short-term solutions and issues and long-term. Short-term, quite honestly, we need to get money into the hands of our providers so they can open or stay open and become stable and get the workforce in there to be able to help these parents who need childcare. Once we've got them open and going and stable, we need to make sure they have the PPE that they need so they can continue to stay open and be safe. And then we need to look at the workforce to help them. But then let's look at what are those long-term solutions that we're going to need. What are some of those tools that we can develop and implement that will help childcare providers grow, expand, and then ultimately serve the parents and help the businesses? We're looking at a shared solutions plan, a shared staffing plan, a business coaching and mentoring program, all kinds of different things that we know our providers need so we can help them become sustainable and grow.
Renee was talking about how while things are very difficult and really dire right now because of this pandemic, it has exposed some of the real failings in our culture that maybe it's been easy to overlook as the economy was bouncing back. Do you feel like there's a silver lining here, Dawn, that maybe people are seeing this picture more clearly?
It's time to take advantage of this. Absolutely. You know, we always used to see childcare as a family issue. It was supported 75% by family fees. It's always been that kitchen table issue. Not anymore. It is an economic issue. It's become a business issue. We're seeing economic development. We're seeing business leaders. We're seeing all kinds of people coming forward today to say, okay, we get it now. How can we all help? How can we all work together to address this so we can move a stronger childcare industry forward? So that's our silver lining. Now let's take advantage of that and let's see what we can make happen.
And we all need to get through the next few months while we try
yes,
to do that.
We do.
Dawn, thank you
yes,
so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Dawn Oliver Wyand is Executive Director of the Iowa Women's Foundation. This hour, we've been talking about the intense pressures on working parents due to this pandemic. And again, many of those pressures are hitting women significantly harder, many women being forced out of the workforce. And we'll keep our eye on this as it develops over the coming months. In the meantime, take care. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.